And good afternoon and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet with only half a voice still. Last week I had absolutely none, which is why I wasn't here. I am here in the studio with Ron Landis. Late Patty Fink is running a little bit late. Our guests today are transgender terrorists Leslie McMurray and Katie Sprinkle. As Katie just said, we are coming for your penis. Snip.
Ew.
I've got scissors. Scissors and a pair of tweezers.
Let's talk a little bit legislation and garbage that's going on in this state because it's getting more intense and more serious. SB 6 was originally meant to be what? Let's just talk about what it first originally was.
I mean, in our opinion, that it's a hate bill, or in Patrick's opinion, it's supposed to protect women.
It's a way of bringing North Carolina's prosperity from HB2 to Texas. You know, all the good fortune that HB2 brought to the wonderful people of North Carolina, Dan Patrick wants to bring here.
So you mean that good fortune of losing an estimated $1 billion.
Yeah, losing NCAA tournament games, Super Bowl, NBA All-Star games, things like that.
Having Angie's List pull their company out.
PayPal.
That type of good fortune.
Absolutely.
That they aren't going to come here.
Right. Okay, so what did the bill originally say?
Well, the bill was originally in three parts. The first part was basically HB2. Government buildings will no longer be allowed to accommodate transgender people. It would remove basically prohibit cities from passing non-discrimination ordinances, really of any kind. Then Section 2 focuses on schools, not allowing schools to accommodate transgender students. And then Section 3 doesn't really deal with the whole transgender issue. It just says that if something is a crime and that crime occurs in a bathroom, that will enhance the punishment range for that. So that was sort of the original way that the bill was created.
And Section 1 of that, it does specify about individuals having to use the restroom what's listed on their birth certificate.
Yes. Yes, and again, that language came right from HB2 and the Liberty Institute and all those not-so-wonderful folks.
So how does it address because many individuals have had their birth certificate change?
It doesn't. If you've had your birth certificate corrected, then it just flat-out doesn't apply to you.
Does it not apply, or are they just confused?
Well, I think they're confused.
Well, confused, doesn't apply. And how do you police that?
Well,
do you have to carry around?
Transgender people are always accused of being confused, but I'm confused about when it applies, who it applies to, because are you suddenly not this threat once your birth certificate is changed?
Apparently
right.
not.
Yeah.
Apparently not. And here's the irony of it, in my view. At least as bad as HB2 is in North Carolina, at least North Carolina has a statewide procedure in place that says that there is a mechanism where you can get your birth certificates fixed. And then they added a provision that if you were born in a state where you couldn't change your birth certificate, North Carolina would issue you a document that would exempt you from HB2.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Texas has none of that.
None of that.
So if you can get your birth certificate changed, awesome. But we don't really have a statewide procedure in place that allows that. So Texas, by instituting SB6, would actually be worse than North Carolina because we don't have...
Because of confusion.
Yeah, because I don't think it's confusion. I think Dan Patrick knows exactly what he's doing. He's selling the myth that transgender people are dangerous, and he's couching it in this, oh, it's the whole predator thing. No... It's not. It's you using the word transgender and predator as many times in the same sentence as humanly possible.
Well, let's just test this out. Leslie, how many women have you attacked in restrooms?
Lately or
well,
ever?
Just over your career of attacking people in restrooms.
She's behind on her quota.
Zero?
Okay. Katie, have you?
Oh, I'm a conscientious objector to the whole So zero.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's fair to mention, though, that I saw an article in the San Antonio Express, and it said that in the first 2 weeks after the bill was filed, the lieutenant governor's office was receiving 20 calls a day in support of this. However, I think it's also fair to mention that he was receiving 1,000 calls a day against.
He just wasn't announcing that.
Wasn't 20 in favor, 1,000 a day against. It's 10,000 to 200 in the first 2 weeks.
Wow.
And you can still call the lieutenant governor's office, whether they're still doing their tally that they originally had started doing. We all knew that, that they were only going to tally the favorable votes. Mm-hmm. But I called, and their phone lines were so busy that you, a lot of times you couldn't get through. Mm-hmm. You might have to call three or four times, or you could leave a voicemail.
You know, aside from the obvious, you know, just an incredible, hateful, stupid bill, one of the things that some of the locals in North Carolina, you know, admitted that HB2 was a very unenforceable bill.
They're all unenforceable.
And so, the same thing's going to be here in Texas. Even if they do pass this, it's unenforceable. How in the world is it going to have people? Who's going to check?
Well, we're afraid of is not so much of how they're going to enforce it in reality. How it's going to get forced practically is that people are going to be self-appointing themselves
exactly.
as the police, and people are going to be assaulted. And most often, the victims of this are going to be gender non-conforming cisgendered women.
Yes.
They just look a little bit too butch for somebody's eye, right. And they're going to get grabbed and hauled out of the women's room. And I think that you just have to trust adults to know which bathroom is right for them and leave it at that.
And we know that happens because a woman back in, I believe it was May, right here in the DFW yes. area, was accosted by a man at a hospital because he just wanted to make sure she was a woman.
Just the same
was
guy
he arrested?
No.
Nope.
Why? He accosted her.
Yeah. Well, I think it partially is because the sheriff in Denton County is
on
record,
right.
yeah, as saying that he would beat unconscious any trans person he saw in a bathroom peeing with his daughter.
But yes. this was not wow. a transgender person.
Nope,
this
was cisgender female.
you know, we don't know whether she was gay or straight. Doesn't really matter. But she was assaulted.
She wasn't assaulted. She was accosted. This man approached her and was
questioning her gender.
I literally followed her into the women's room, and when she confronted him, "What are you doing?" So, "Oh, I just wanted to make sure that you weren't a man going into the women's room." And she videoed it.
But he's a man going into the women's room.
I was
going to
say, he's a man going
so
in there.
So he has just violated the law, hasn't
ironically,
he?
SB6 lists about six different classes. Like, what's funny is, there are people that want to argue against transgender people going to the bathroom, politicians, and they'll say, well, if we allow this, then men will dress up as women in order to get into the bathroom. And my point's consistently been they don't have to dress up as women. They can dress up as a janitor. And that bill codifies that. The janitors or cleaning people can't, of the opposite sex can go into a women's bathroom. You can also be handicapped and go into the women's bathroom. You can also help someone who's handicapped. You can also be a parent with a small child that needs help in the bathroom. So there's five or six different areas that are a whole lot easier to dress up as and pretend as to go right in. So there's really not a problem if somebody really wants to go into the women's bathroom, but SB6 is just making it legal, ironically, and as well as forcing trans men into the bathroom.
And what's interesting is when you look at what probably one of the most prolific serial killers in United States history, Ted Bundy, his MO was to bandage his arm up in a fake cast because it disarmed people. So it's pretty simple to get a wheelchair, stick somebody in it, and wheel them into a bathroom.
Right.
So this nonsense that, oh, predators are going to start wearing dresses and wigs and going into women's rooms, why?
I'm just helping my poor aunt who had a stroke, and she needs to go to the bathroom.
Oh, she's done. She texted me, "I'm taking this wheelchair in." I mean, it's the lies and deceit that the religious right primarily...
Just be honest and say that it's a discrimination bill and leave it at that.
Yeah.
I mean, some of these scenarios, they're just sick fantasies.
Well, they really are.
They're all our fantasies.
Let me draw another picture for you, because Section 2 of this bill involves schools, and it's to keep transgender kids out of the proper bathroom. And what happens in a lot of cases, I spoke to a mom just the other day. She called and she said her 7-year-old had come out to her in this 2-hour-long tearful confession that she sees herself as male. Okay, great. So she wants to be supportive, doesn't really know what to do, so I gave her a bunch of resources. But what happens with a lot of times with these kids is they will socially transition, not medically, because you really can't when someone is, you know, 8 or 9 years old. There's no need, and it just isn't done. So they socially transition. So what will happen is the child will finish second grade as a boy and then start third grade, maybe in a different school, as a girl. She looks like a girl. She acts like a girl. She's addressed as a girl. Girl's name, girl's clothes. She is a little girl. And she uses a little girl's bathroom without incident. What SB 2 and Section 2 would do is to force that child into the boys' room. Tell me who the threat is. Tell me who's going to get hurt when this happens.
Exactly.
Okay? So transgender kids don't need someone to protect other kids from them. They're the ones that need protecting. And that's the way those laws should be framed, is to protect those kids, because they're the most vulnerable and marginalized people in the entire school. They need protecting. And this puts them in jeopardy.
The most laughable lie about the school portion is when the Dan Patricks of the world go, well, do you want grown men showering with your teenage girls? I'm like, okay, what the hell are grown men doing in middle schools?
Yeah, when and where does that happen?
Nowhere. Well, in the
and he is, that's
fantasy
what I'm saying.
Seriously.
In
my
these
country
are sick
land,
fantasies that these people have.
And that's
have.
The other is, I can tell you, if you have a transgender girl who was born male and is now transitioned to female, let's say they're playing on the girls' volleyball team, which is fine, what ought to happen. They are not going to be running around naked in the locker room, because that exposes the one thing that makes them different from all their peers. They are the least likely person in the world to be running around naked in a locker room. It just isn't going to happen.
And the implication is that transgender people don't have inhibitions, don't have modesties, that apparently we're just these huge exhibitionists. And the plain simple fact of the matter is we are probably more self-conscious about our bodies than a lot of cisgender people.
And I will agree with you. You have only appeared on this show once naked. So
it was hot.
It was hot that day. Okay, so here's what I want to get into with this bill. They're already amending it, because obviously these sick fantasies and these scenarios that they've come up with, it's pissing off the business community, because the business community's attitude toward these is, how the hell are we supposed to police this garbage? And then how are we supposed to keep these sick men who are following women into the, you know, and they're self-appointed? We don't want that, right?
Right.
Okay, so business is...
Well, it's not really happening anyway.
Well, we don't need laws that are going to protect us against something that isn't going on.
Uh-huh.
So stop it. So one of the businesses that does a lot of business in Texas, probably more business in Texas than any other state, is the NFL and the NBA. NBA has 3 teams. The
NFL
has 2 teams. We've had Super Bowls here just recently. So they're objecting. The governor is furious. You know, mind your own business. What do you mean, mind my own business? We're doing business in your state. Mm-hmm. We have every right to
We're
talk to your
hundreds
legislature.
Hundreds of millions of dollars into your state.
Like literally hundreds of millions.
And not just that. You know, a company like PayPal that pulled out some jobs out of North Carolina, that's not high profile. How many people watched Beyonce last week? Or 2 weeks ago on the Super Bowl, right?
Lady Gaga.
Lady Gaga.
Yeah.
Thank you.
White Beyonce.
Yes, her. Yeah. How many people watched Lady Gaga? Hundreds of millions of people watched. That was such huge publicity for Houston.
It was.
It's not even. We can't even rate how much money that's worth. Mm-hmm. So this business, the NFL, is against it. So what's the new exemption that they wrote in just for the NFL?
Well, in Section 1, what they've done is they've tried to limit it only to government-owned and operated businesses. So even if you are, you know, let's say the stadium is owned by the city of Houston, Since it's government property, it would normally be covered under SB 6. But there's an exemption that if you lease that property, you are not, as the lessee, required to follow it. You can set your own bathroom policies. So now you've got this, that they have watered down this bill because, of course, women and children need protection so bad.
Right. This bill is about protection, right?
Right.
Yeah, the amusing thing is what the message seems to be, that women are in jeopardy and in need of protection from transgender people in government buildings. I would think, and nowhere else, but I would think that of all the places which have more security would be government buildings. Like, you can't go to City Hall without going through a metal detector and have officers search through your belongings, and same with the courthouse and things like that. So I would think you would be safer already in government buildings, but that's the only place they seem to think that women are in jeopardy, because apparently they're perfectly safe in stadiums and they're perfectly safe in theaters and hotels.
At concerts.
See, this is so confusing.
Well, it's just a big lie.
Yeah,
they're doing is, Katie said, they're selling stigma. And if the people in Texas are dumb enough to buy the stigma, then that's on them. And
right.
It seems like with whoever's in the White House right now, there's an awful lot of dumb going around. But I just think we need to start seeing through and understanding what they're trying to do. They're selling a stigma of a population that has done nothing wrong.
If you can make someone afraid and keep them afraid long enough, they will become angry. And when you get them angry and you can keep them angry long enough, they begin to hate. And once they hate, then you can do whatever you want to do. All you have to do is study a little bit of history. Look at what happened to Native Americans. People were told that they're a threat, that you should be afraid. Those people got angry. Then they began to hate Native Americans. And then they were allowed then to essentially exterminate them. We did it to African American people. We've done it to immigrants from all parts of the world, not just Muslims, not just Mexico, not just South America. Go to Boston and do some research in the 1920s when you had Irish coming in. No Irish need apply.
And the gay population, too, has had a little bit of that whipped on them.
Yeah. We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. Our guests are transgender terrorists Leslie McMurray and Katie Sprinkle.
Why's it got to be like that?
We're resistance fighters.
Ah, okay.
Freedom fighters.
It's David.
Pledge drive is over. It really ended quickly this time.
Quickly, we want to thank everybody. Don't send money. Whatever you do, pledge drive is over. Do not send money.
No, that's not what I was going to say. I was going to say, if you were waiting till today's show to actually make your pledge, our number is 972-647-1893. Josh can still take your pledge.
Tear up those checks.
We're not doing a pledge break or anything. I'm just saying, if you haven't made your pledge yet, feel free, or just go online, KNON.org, and click on the pledge button. Why don't we take our break? We'll be back with more right after this.
This is Rawlins Gelland, and I'm listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3. And darn glad to be doing it.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Ron Landis. The late Patty Fink is still running a little bit late.
Yeah, I think she'll be running late until next week.
It's possible. our guests are transgender. What did we change?
Freedom fighters.
Transgender freedom fighters. Leslie McMurray and Katie Sprinkle.
Yes. So we're talking about the insidious, stupid, crazy, hateful bill that's down the pike here in Texas, the HB2 version.
It would be easier to laugh at if this wasn't seriously being discussed by
the
legislature.
It's also not the only one. There are plenty of others.
There's several
that have been filed. March 10th is a deadline for bill filing, and there was a whole slew of religious freedom bills that were filed last week.
We'll get to those in a second. But on
before the break, we were talking about how the NFL has put their two cents in about this. You know, the Super Bowl was just held in Houston a couple of weeks ago, and Lady Gaga was performing. Well, there's a whole list of celebrities who have come out vocally and signed on to.
There's over 100, I think.
Yeah, it's 142 of them. I'm just going to name some of them that are against this bill. Lady Gaga, that's no surprise. Sting, Cyndi Lauper, Britney Spears, Ryan Adams, Ariana Grande, Whoopi Goldberg, Jimmy Kimmel, Amy Schumer, Miley Cyrus, Janelle Monáe, interestingly, and the Dixie Chicks. Interestingly enough, Houston native Beyonce has not so far.
It's interesting.
So, but there's a whole list of celebrities who are also against this.
A guy like Mark Cuban has to be thinking about that as well. And really, they're against the bill, but they're just against discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
And generally speaking, at least what I'm hearing is, you know, the NFL, NCAA, NBA, they don't really want to get involved in a controversy. They just don't want to send their money and put on their events in a state that is in favor of discrimination, and they've shown that with North Carolina, and I think Texas is running the same risk. And the estimates from the Texas Association of Business, they conducted a survey a while back, was going to be an economic impact of over $8 billion and a loss of about 170,000 jobs. And for the GOP, which is constantly spouting, oh, we're all about jobs, we're all about employment, we're all about business, they're screwing over business, they're costing their state jobs, they're doing exactly what they said they wouldn't do.
Because they're not all about
business.
And they're
doing it in the name of just a cheap discrimination bill that absolutely does nothing except hurt a tiny marginalized group of people. It's like they've lost their minds.
You know, and people wonder, why do the why does NFL, why does NBA, why does Major League Baseball, why are they against these things? People don't remember history, do they? These teams and leagues went through a period of discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
It was painful.
Yeah.
It was expensive. It cost fans. It was destructive. They're not against. They're against discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
They just want everybody to come just watch a football game. I don't want to police your bathroom.
I love spirited debates, and you know, I wish we'd get in a situation where, you know, we could talk to somebody reasonably and rationally that opposes our viewpoints. That part's fine. But what I'm seeing lately, just in the last few years, and especially in this last election cycle, is a kind of mean-spiritedness that I've never seen before in American politics. I mean, it's just plain meanness and hate and stubbornness, and it's really disconcerting.
It is disconcerting, but I understand it. It's really hard to have a sensible, respectable conversation with somebody who has a different opinion than you when it involves discrimination. You know, we can talk about taxes. You know, everybody has to pay taxes. You might think the taxes are too high. I think the taxes are too low. We can meet somewhere in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about, oh, this group of people shouldn't be allowed to do X, Y, or Z, then yeah, it's hard to even have a
well, yeah, remember, we're not going to agree basic, to disagree.
Exactly,
I'm not equal.
Remember
exactly.
The argument.
Exactly.
You remember the argument on marriage equality, mm-hmm. that it was going to cause the ruination of traditional marriage.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know a single traditional marriage that has been hurt in any way, shape, or form by the ability of same-sex people to get married.
Well,
I don't know a single
the
one.
Statistics on that
there
just show
been.
The opposite.
There haven't been.
Right after Massachusetts passed same-sex marriage, the marriage rate in Massachusetts became the highest in the country. Their divorce rate became the lowest in the country and kept going in that direction over the next number of years. And as states were adding on marriage equality, the same thing happened in those states.
So the sanctity of marriage was, in fact, ruined. Yeah.
No.
So the
if anything,
thing about,
we helped it.
The thing about equal rights is, extending equal rights to someone else takes absolutely nothing from you.
People don't understand that. They think somehow it does. That
it
if
does.
Somehow you have something that I had before, now what I had isn't worth as much.
Yeah, if
your privilege.
If only you have a diamond, mm-hmm. the diamond is very valuable. But if everyone has it, then nobody really cares because we already have it.
I think part of the problem is some people think they actually have a right to discriminate.
Exactly.
It's like you're taking away my right to do that.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go to one of these other
because
bills.
Of
this
that
week,
book.
Mm-hmm. This week, a new so-called religious freedom bill was filed in the legislature.
Actually, several were.
Oh, several.
Yeah.
Describe what those even mean.
It's basically codifying the ability to discriminate against a group of people, whether they be transgender, whether they be in the LG community, and just saying that because of their quote-unquote deeply held religious beliefs, that they may, in fact, discriminate against those groups of people. And like Katie was saying, there's one word substantially that they were thinking
well,
about
Texas,
to
take out? Texas has a religious freedom bill. It's been on the books since the late 90s. It was drafted after a lot of debate, a lot of research, a lot of effort. It was a bipartisan effort, which, of course, you don't see anymore. And so basically what it says is that different measures cannot substantially burden someone's religious beliefs. So what Dan Patrick and his ilk want to do is take out that word substantial so that it now reads, you cannot burden someone's religious beliefs, which basically says,
anyway,
just do whatever you want.
Right. Because all of these so-called religious freedom bills are popping up all over the nation. And, you know, the issue started with the stupid issue of baking a cake. Baking cakes for gay couples and some
and
people
selling flowers.
And selling flowers.
Here is, and this goes back to what we were talking about just a moment ago about why you cannot have a spirited debate. Because when you approach someone, whether it's the bathroom issue, whether it's marriage equality, they're approaching you from a position of fear. They're terrified that their religious beliefs are being trampled on. So what the Dan Patricks of the world are doing is they're terrifying these people. So you cannot have a rational conversation with someone who is terrified of something. And you can point out, like with the bathroom bill, Dallas, the city of Dallas has had a non-discrimination ordinance in place for over 10 years that has allowed transgender people to use the bathrooms that conform with their gender identity, and you're not seeing these problems. You're not seeing the predators sneaking in there, the same goofballs that break the law. There's been no upsurge whatsoever, but you can't show that logical, rational thought process to somebody who's terrified because all they see is the predator.
Yeah, it's like if you have a snarling Rottweiler and somebody's backed into a corner having a conversation with them about how few people actually get bit by dogs is not going to have a lot of impact
on them. Right, exactly.
But see, and that's the other problem with politics in these modern day times, and that is facts don't matter anymore.
What are facts anyway?
Exactly.
You mean alternative facts?
No.
I love alternative
facts.
It makes our job so much easier.
Yeah, it reduces the burden. You know, a lot of people don't know that there was a lawsuit that was filed by Ken Paxton, our erstwhile attorney general, to permit doctors to not treat two classes of people based on their deeply held religious beliefs and those two classes.
Let me guess one of them.
Okay.
Use peoples.
Us peoples would be one group of people that doctors would not have to treat if they have a deeply held religious belief. And the other would be women who've had an abortion. And I think that's just ridiculous. Again,
okay, so,
it goes back to that mean-spiritedness.
Okay, wait. So, Norma McCarvey just died yesterday. And she actually didn't have an abortion. Could we not treat her because she sued to have the abortion?
Because she was a poster child. I don't know. I just think pretty much it's getting to the point where you can say, I don't want to give you a cup of coffee because of my deeply held religious beliefs.
Is wrong. Well, she led the charge, so yeah, I'm not going to treat her.
Okay, so let's say you had an abortion, Katie. How do I know this? As a doctor,
doctors know, believe it or not.
How?
From what I've heard, from inspection, looking at your records, somehow I've heard they can tell.
Well, it would depend on where you had it done and how you had it done as to what records might be available. I think a lot of those clinics avoid coding and documenting things for that very reason. Depending upon how the procedure was done, they might be able to see something in an examination.
How would they know that you had an abortion and not a miscarriage?
Right. I don't know that they would.
I don't. But, you know, I don't know how
because
they would
know. Because of the scarlet A on the forehead?
I don't know how they would know if you're going in for something that's non-genital related. If you're just going in because you've got a cold or sore throat, there's no need to be looking down there. So
sure they do.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, try walking in our shoes. You can ask.
So let's just make this clear. A doctor,
crazy.
I understand and I'm really half and half on all of these religious freedom things. If somebody doesn't want to bake me a cake, I don't want to give them the amount of money that I gave them for our huge-ass cake that we had baked if they don't want to bake it for us. I'd rather the person tells me. Same thing. You go in because to a doctor because you have a cold, and you need him to look down your throat and then maybe prescribe an antibiotic or something for you. Are you telling me that in that case, the doctor would then say to you, well, I can't treat your cold because you're transgender?
They could if they wanted to, and that's the point. And I participated in a survey. It was a request from it was one of the postgrad nursing students down at the University of Texas in Austin, and they were doing a survey regarding transgender healthcare. And one of the questions she asked was, what is your experience finding transgender-friendly doctors? And I said, can I dissect that question for a second before I answer it? Because I have an answer for it. But to even ask or use the phrase transgender-friendly doctors, which is used a lot in our community, I'm always being asked, hey, do you know any trans-friendly doctors? But I said, do you know how ridiculous that is? It's like asking for a dog-friendly veterinarian. It's like if you get into veterinary medicine, then you ought to treat dogs. If you're a medical doctor, then you ought to treat people. And transgender people are people, too. And the idea of finding a doctor who's trans-friendly is, to me, obscene. That question should never, ever come up, but it does.
It does.
Because like 20% of us have been refused care at a doctor because we're transgender.
And the thing of it is that here in a large city like the Metroplex, you know what? If this doctor doesn't want to treat me, there's a million other doctors I can go to. I have choice. If this baker doesn't want to bake me a cake, well, forget him. I will go someplace else. But I've also lived in a small town. There may only be two or three places you can go.
That's true.
And if those two or three places, if that's all you got, if it's a baker, okay, fine. You can go into a larger city. That's not that major a deal. But if it's a doctor, and they're the only one in 30 miles, and you've got a severe cold, I mean, David made it down here today, but he's feeling better. Imagine having to drive an hour to an hour and a half to a large city to see a doctor when you're very seriously ill, even with just the flu.
And, you know, even within a city the size of Dallas or the Metroplex, yeah, there's a lot of doctors here, but there's still maybe only a handful of specialists for whatever problem you might, one issue right. you might have. So you might really need to see one of those specialists, and they turn you away. What are you supposed to do? Fly to another city? That's more money. So I don't know. I see what you're saying, David, about I don't, you know, if this person doesn't want to bake my cake, fine, I'll go to somebody I want to know. But you shouldn't even have to do that.
I'm not saying you should have to. And especially with medical care, I was really more making it clear we're not talking about a doctor who says to you, you know, I'm just not a specialist in looking at your hormone levels and other things related to your transgender.
That's different.
That's why we educate them ourselves.
Yeah, what's the percentage of transgender people who actually have to educate their own doctors?
It's about a quarter. About one in four of us have to educate our doctors on how to treat us.
My doctor, when I came out to my doctor, I was actually seeing a separate doctor for my hormones. And when I finally came out to my personal physician, he was like, well, I will monitor this stuff. It doesn't take that much research just to figure out where your levels need to be. He did that work, and he began to monitor my hormone levels. And when they've been off, he's recognized that, hey, wait a minute, these are a little off. But he didn't have to start me on my meds because I was already started. So he's just following what had been in place for a couple of years. And
there was a learning curve with mine, though.
Yeah, there was a bit of a learning curve, but that happens.
Okay, does that bother you that there had to be a learning curve at all?
Yeah, it does, because transgender healthcare is not... Hey, Patty, how you doing?
Hey.
Transgender healthcare is not taught as part of the curriculum in medical school. And not that it's a big, giant specialty. I mean, pediatric endocrinology, I think, is something that's on the rise and is going to be bigger and bigger as time goes on. But generally, treating transgender people is just treating people, but there are a few peculiarities. So having a little slice of that educational pie would be very useful for doctors because there's more of us that are out in the community now.
You know, and Katie, the way you're describing it, it seemed like your doctor just was very honest with you. I've never treated somebody transgender before, so I'll learn.
Yeah. That was the approach. And he had a friend who was transgender, so he was familiar with what the process was, and he was clearly open to it because he has a friend that was transgender. So he's like, you know what, I can pull out some papers. And after I had surgery back in September, I had to go see a doctor because I had some I had a UTI, and my doctor was unavailable, so I had to see a different doctor. And I ended up spending like an hour with him just talking about the different aspects of being transgender and how my medical care works. He actually went back to my private physician because they work together, and he goes, what papers do you have? I really want to understand this better. I really want to learn this.
But these are good things because it's an emerging type practice. Here's where that Paxton thing is insidious. Let's say you have a heart attack. You go to the emergency room. A doctor would have the right to say, I can't treat your heart attack because you're transgender.
Yeah.
And that offends me.
Well, and there was a woman who a couple of years ago was badly injured. Paramedics showed up.
Tyra Hunter is her name.
When they began to provide medical care, they realized, oh, she's transgender. And they backed off and they let her die.
Okay, we need to take a break. Wow. But what does the American Medical Association say about this kind of practice where you can just deny service to somebody?
Do you have a cricket sound effect? Yeah, they haven't said anything.
They've said nothing about this.
No, nothing yet.
So far it's okay to just deny a service.
I would just call it tacit approval, I guess, maybe, because they haven't come out and endorsed it, but they sure haven't opposed it. And I wish
there might be
would.
A reason for that.
It could be, but I can't imagine what it might be.
And it could be how many doctors have actually done this.
I don't know, but I think that the fact that people ask, what has your experience been finding a trans-friendly doctor, shows that there's a problem to me. There's a problem of trust. I think the number is 18 to 20% of transgender people aren't even out to their doctor because they don't trust them.
And so, we need to take a break. Yeah. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Ron Landis and the very late Patty Fink. To Mars Boy, I hope you had a good visit with your son yesterday. I'll be down to see you next week, and we'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
I'm Patty Fink, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on KNON 89.3 FM.
And that Patty Fink person is here. Welcome, Patty. How's your dog?
Oh, thanks. Well, she's good. She's just getting older, and we've just, you know, we're trying to get adjusted to what we need to look for to help her.
Yeah.
So,
gotcha. Just before the break, we were talking about, you know, looking for doctors and why it shouldn't be a problem. Why, Leslie, you were saying how you hate the term trans-friendly doctor, yeah. You know, when people ask about that. When I was just, you know, discussing whether, you know, we go through the same things, like, you know, any gay-friendly doctors. Before I was married and had a kid, I was in my 20s, I got with a doctor, and I was very open with him that I was gay, and he was clearly uncomfortable. And he immediately wanted to do an HIV test. I already knew my status. Fine, do one. Came back just like we thought it would. And then he relaxed.
Yeah.
But he was so uncomfortable, and I could tell.
Yeah.
I wasn't with him for long. And when Danny and I got together, especially after we had Gabrielle, we were all on the same insurance. So we had this doctor's shop. It was very important for me to find a doctor that was gay-friendly.
You know, it's funny. My career has been as a comedian and disc jockey and radio person. I'm not trained as a social worker. I'm not trained as you know, someone working in a nonprofit, but I do. I work with HIV patients all day. As a matter of fact, every single person I see all day long has HIV, and it's not contagious in that way.
Right.
You know,
of course,
okay, it's not. I can sit there and give hugs and shake hands.
So here's the thing about going to a gay doctor. I've been to my doctor 3 times. Of course, they did some tests. He calls me up. He says, well, you're not pregnant.
Woo! Hallelujah. I would not want another little David.
So you have the little minus sign on there? Do you have to pee on the stick?
So I see what you're saying. It's a, as annoying as it is, we all have to do it, though.
Here's how ridiculous this whole gay-friendly, trans-friendly thing is. Imagine having to go through life, ooh, I need to find a black-friendly doctor.
And you know, I haven't personally, but some I have personally want to see that. But
how offensive is it that you would even have to think any of those things?
Right.
And yet, probably at some point, somebody has had to think all of them.
All of them.
But you know the way things are being treated right now, legislatively and according to all of the rhetoric you hear, it sounds as if the thunderous noise is they need to find a Christian-friendly doctor. Because it sounds like their rights are being taken away or threatened in some manner or fashion when it's not.
But here is how this is why this is so insidious, because this is how this is going to play out. You are going to have either a transgender person or a gay person who goes to a doctor and something happens and that person dies and that doctor gets sued.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that somebody was transgender or gay probably never came up in conversation, but boy, when that doctor's on the hook, I guarantee you there are going to be lawyers, and I'm a lawyer, so I can say this, that we're mean, nasty snakes, but I promise you there's going to be some lawyer like Ken Paxton going, well, they have a religious freedom to just say, no, didn't work for Nancy Reagan, but it's going to work for us. We just said no, and, well, I'm sorry, that person died, but you know what? That's my
It was God's will.
It was God's will. Hallelujah.
Well, that's what's so insidious about this proposed new one that, SB6 is talking about government.
Mm-hmm.
The government is controlling, like, where you can go to the bathroom. The government
imposes. That's what we were saying earlier, is because women are only in jeopardy in government buildings, apparently.
Right, right. And
that's
public
the only place
facilities.
They need protecting, yeah.
Right. But this new one would allow individuals, the government has nothing to do with it, the individuals to discriminate against other individuals. There is no compelling state interest, you know. So if I walk into a grocery store and they say, oh, you know, I think you've had an abortion, I'm not going to check your groceries, you know, or all the way to a paramedic at an emergency, a car wreck.
Welcome to Dairy Queen. You can have a blizzard. You can have a blizzard. No blizzard for you. No blizzard for you.
Exactly. And it's completely insidious. And how do you know what you're going to walk into?
Right.
There's no provision for that whatsoever.
Yeah.
And not that any of this is right, but even for the practicality of deployment of a law.
Do we have to wear
have
the
we thought
of
have we thought this through?
Right, exactly. How is all this enforced?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was my point. How this the insidious nature of these things comes to play. It doesn't come to play on the front end of something. It's typically going to rise on the back end when, you know, the crap has hit the fan and now people are scrambling and suddenly this doctor or this paramedic or this shop owner, suddenly they found Jesus. They didn't know where he was before, but boy, they know where he is now.
Right.
And he's in their shop. And so now that's where they're going to use it. It becomes more of a shield that they're going to use to protect themselves when, you know, they've screwed up.
Or you have a fourth grader that ends up taking their own life because of bullying and harassment and anxiety at school from this law, where in third grade, using the girls' bathroom, they didn't have a single problem. But with this law, they end up with so much anxiety and pain and hurt that they just end it. That's when it'll hit the fan. I just wonder how many people are going to have to die because of this hatred.
And a quick point, what's happened in Indiana, there was a case where a woman who was a Christian beat her 7-year-old child, with a coat hanger with 36 marks on his body, and the school reported it as child abuse.
Yes, they should have.
And she claimed under Indiana's license to discriminate law that she had a right to, because that's her sincerely held belief, that she should whip the crap out of her own child, a little kid, you know, because he sinned.
Spare the rod, spoil the child. That's what the God says.
That's what she quoted.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's what she quoted.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it was shot down. And because they don't have any provisions, like if you're committing your belief or practicing your belief violates other state laws, too bad. State law wins. You know, so the laws against child abuse prevail.
Good.
And we don't hear them talking about that kind of stuff. They right. have no plan for when these...
And they don't care.
Yeah,
and
they don't care.
I mean, they are... Politicians are basically teenagers. They see as far as the next election. That's it. And that's all they see.
Okay, so there's one other bill that's really insidious. It's Connie Burton's Tattletale Bill. In this bill, if a kid in school goes to a counselor or a teacher confidentially to talk to them about somebody they're dating, some question they have, if that counselor or teacher is approached by the parent, there's no more confidentiality. That the school personnel would be required by law to tell the parent. Now, in some cases, it's just a kid just feels comfortable with the counselor, asks a question. In other cases, it's the kid does not feel comfortable at home asking these questions, and so is asking somebody that they trust in school. You were talking about suicide.
Yeah. As a parent, my girls, when they were young, I'd want to know if something was going on with them. And I think they would come and tell me if there was, but I would want to know as a parent. But on the other hand, I did a workshop a while back with the Resource Center, and it was with LGBT youth homelessness. And LGBT kids make up about 7% of the population in the city of Dallas. They make up 40% of the homeless kids on the street. And that's because when they come out to their parents, they get kicked out of the house. This bill is really going to be damaging to me, because if a kid doesn't want to tell their parents that they're gay or lesbian or transgender, there's probably a pretty good reason for that. I mean, kids have a pretty good read on their parents about what might happen.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. And so forcing the school to out this kid to their parents when they're not ready to have that conversation is probably going to result in those parents kicking them out on the street. So if they're ready to have a nice uptick in homeless kids on the street, again, this kind of cold-blooded, mean-spiritedness, it just is galling to me.
And you know the kind of advice they usually get in school? You know who you are. You're going to be going away to school in a year. Can you keep that to yourself and keep it private? When you go away to school, you'll be able to come out. Mm-hmm. Can you continue to just get along with your parents? That's usually the type of advice that a counselor is giving. As long as, are you safe telling your parents? Well, not really. You know, in my church, they'd be teasing me and this. Well, it's going to be over in a year or so. And by telling the parent, that's the end of the kid's safety.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing that they're doing,
and maybe
is,
their education, too, because they don't want to pay for college right. funding.
Right. They are trying to isolate the LGBT community because, you know, 41% of the transgender community has attempted suicide. And I spoke the other day to some professionals in one of the drug court systems that we have in Dallas County. And what I told them is, look, if I took all of you, got you fired, got you kicked out of your homes, got your entire family, your entire support system to completely cut you off, got all of your friends to completely cut you off, so you were literally in this torrent of red hell that we call Texas by yourself with no support system, I guarantee you, you're going to snap and take your own life. That's what happens. And the Connie Burtons of the world, that's what they want to happen. They want to socially isolate people because in their warped sense, you know what? I'm going to treat you fairly if you behave correctly.
But, you know, behave like I want you to behave.
Exactly. Exactly.
And she denies that this is an anti-trans bill or an anti-LGBT bill.
And she's lying, too.
She's completely lying. And I had a discussion, I'll be kind, on Twitter with an old geezer, old white man, who was supporting this bill and said, no, this is not about LGBT people, or as he calls them, queers. You know, this is not about them. This is about every child. No child has a right to, has any rights. So I said, so
that's not true.
So in your home, does your bathroom have a door? You know, does your child get to have privacy when they're in the bathroom? And he would never respond to any of my questions.
Probably because the answer is no.
Right, because, yeah.
Sadly.
and other people were chiming in and such. But this is the way they're thinking, that they're going to justify this.
But again, that's fear.
Kids have no rights.
That's fear.
It's fear. It's and again, once you realize that the person you're talking to is got a fear mentality about them, conversation was over before it ever started.
Yeah.
Because facts don't matter. Rationales don't matter. Logic doesn't matter. All that matters is this person's afraid of something, and it's what I call the triangle of death. It's the Cartman triangle that's used in drama and all theater to create drama.
It's even used in like family counseling.
Yeah, you have a victim, which is the people that they're terrifying. You have the villain, which in this case would be, well, me. Mm-hmm. And then you have the hero, which would be Dan Patrick. That's why Dan Patrick and Connie Burton and all those idiots are doing what they are doing. They are trying to scare their constituency, and then they're pointing the finger at someone else, and they are to blame for what you're afraid of.
Has that ever happened in history?
Yeah, there was a guy, I believe his name was Adolf.
Yeah.
Used it very effectively.
Artist.
Yeah.
What was his last name? See, nobody writes about this stuff. You can't find it anywhere.
I think it started with an S.
Yeah. But the bottom line is that's what they did. They convinced the German people, who were decimated by having lost a war, their economy was in the toilet, you know. We would have won that war had it not been for people like David. They betrayed us. And if you elect me, I will protect you from them.
Gosh, what's happening today?
Yeah, it's pretty much. It's amazing.
Right, you know, a lot of people think that all this anti-trans bathroom bill nonsense and religious freedom bill nonsense that's been proposed in many states since marriage equality is it's because of marriage equality.
Exactly.
Do you all think that, or do you think you were just next in line on a list?
I always believed we were next in line, and a year before marriage equality hit, I was speaking at GEAR, which is the Resource Center's transgender group, and I said, we need to buckle up here because we're next. Once marriage equality's done, then they're coming for us, and that's exactly what has happened. Now, some of the religious freedom things are, and you see this with any major shift in law, they're testing the boundaries to try to push back, to try to limit. You saw it after Roe v. Wade with states passing different laws to
till this day.
Yeah, to try to curb that, because the goal was to get back in front of the courts. Now, with marriage equality, they're going to be doing the same thing.
And they are, right now.
Yeah, on the day of the Obergefell ruling, I was standing with Katie at the press conference down at City Hall, and I turned to her and I said, today the T in LGBT stands for target.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's exactly been that way ever since.
Yeah. Because if you look, I mean, the city of Dallas has had a non-discrimination ordinance for 15 years.
Yeah.
15 years.
Yeah, how many
people have been peeing in the city at will.
Peacefully.
Peacefully. Yeah, without any problems.
We've had less chaos in our bathrooms in 15 years than they've had in the White House in 2 weeks. I mean,
exactly. Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly it. And, you know, look what happened. It never became an issue until Obergefell.
Just remember that in the White House, it's fantastic. We have the best chaos. Ask anybody.
Terrific.
It's terrific chaos.
Fantastic.
It's luxurious chaos. It's fantastic.
Okay, well, talking about some chaos, some Republican congressmen have been going back to their districts and facing massive protests. Pete Sessions' turn is this Tuesday.
Good.
He's refusing to hold a town hall rally, but he is speaking to a group of Republican women at the Biblical Arts Museum on Park Lane. So the protest against him will be outside the Biblical Arts Center from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m., 7500 Park Lane. They're asking you to bring Missing Pete rally signs, and it sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun.
I don't have my Peter.
And if you don't know where that is, there's a Central Expressway, there's North Park, and then on the other side, opposite side of North Park from Central is
Dallas needs to get petered out. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good one.
Yeah. We just have one more minute.
I can write placards all day.
We just have one more minute. The tactic that most of the legislators who are on our side in getting rid of this bill, what they're using is, like Rafael Anchia sent out a big, long message on Friday, and it said SB5 is bad for business, or HB2 was bad for business in North Carolina, and SB6 is bad for business in Texas. Does that bother you at all that it's being approached like business only?
Yeah, it does. It does. I wrote a piece for The Voice a while back called A Race from Our Own Debate. Mm-hmm. And it's really hurtful to me. I understand it. I understand the need for it because right now saying that transgender people are hurt or that it's going to end up costing lives just doesn't move the meter with people. Saying it's going to cost $8 billion and 150,000 jobs makes people go, whoop. Mm-hmm. But it still makes me sad because things that should be a given for us, like the ability to use a public bathroom. It's a function. It's a biological function that we absolutely have to have. And the thing about transgender people is we want the same thing you do. We want safety, we want security, and we want privacy. We stand up for the same values as anyone else. We all want the same thing. And rather than saying that that is our birthright, they're saying, oh, well, it's going to hurt tourism, and that hurts me.
And I want to thank our guests today, Leslie McMurray and Katie Sprinkle. They are two of the city's biggest transgender terrorists, and we appreciate
freedom
it.
Freedom fighters.
I'm just getting these words from you. Thank you. Come see us again. And we will be back next week with more Lambda Weekly.
This is William, hopefully your favorite videographer from Two Hats Publishing. I hope you enjoyed this video. If you like it, please leave comments below or like, follow, or subscribe to us and get notices of all our videos. We love it, even when you call.